Okay, we'll have our next speaker. We have Zernaz Bashir, who joined the National Recreation and Park Association, or NRPA, in October of 2009, and she is the director of the Strategic Health Initiatives. Her primary responsibility is to provide strategic oversight to the NRPA's health and wellness portfolio, including the development of partnerships and coordination of large federal grants that work to build healthier communities through increased physical activity and improved nutrition.
Good morning. Thank you so much, and I wanted to thank APHA for allowing me to come here and present some of the work we're doing at the National Recreation and Park Association. I'm Zernaz Bashir. I was actually also curious, how many people in the audience are park professionals? Oh, okay, all right. And I have no relationships to disclose. So a little bit about who we are. National Recreation and Park Association is based out in Ashburn, Virginia by the Dulles Airport. Basically, our mission is to advance parks, recreation, and environmental conservation efforts that enhance the quality of life for all people. What I'm going to be focusing my presentation on today is really what parks are doing, how parks are actually getting people more physically active, and what they're doing to improve access to their parks. So we were founded in 1965. Parks are everywhere, right in your backyard. There's about 105,000 local parks out there. And what's really unique about our work is we represent all individuals in society, whether it's children, seniors, people with mobility issues, the underserved populations, parks are there for them. And data shows that 70% of people live within walking distance of a park, and 80% report using a public park. You know, that sounds like a lot, but at the same time, we know people are going to parks. There are a couple challenges with that. We don't know if they're actually using it to be physically active. A lot of people are just sitting on park benches or using it for leisure activities. And then also there is an issue with access to parks, especially with disadvantaged populations and people living out in rural communities. So those are some of the issues that we are looking at NRPA. But our health and wellness strategy is, there's our mission up there, to create healthier communities. And our mission is to provide affordable and accessible services to all citizens. And that's through physical activity programs, nutrition programs, the social benefits that parks provide, and mental aspects as well, which I'll go into in a little bit. And these are just some of the many partners that we work with through our programs. You see a lot of sports partnerships up there as well. So we have a big problem going on today, and I'm sure being public health folks, you've heard all about this. We are heavier than we were one generation ago. Childhood obesity has tripled in the United States for over the past 40 years. And a lot of the research is showing that this is related to the fact that communities are not including or using their built environment to support healthy physical activity. And that's really what parks bring to the table. And, you know, I just think of, I have a son who's in kindergarten. And when I go back to when I was in kindergarten, I remember the entire wall space supplied imaginative types of play toys. We had a big kitchen, a big bench with dress-up toys, and a big dinosaur in the middle of the room, which we could color and ride on. And today when I go into his classroom, all I see are computer screens. So it's just a very different environment, and parks are really stepping up to really change what's going on in the world today. And so there's one solution. I mentioned parks providing affordable and accessible services. We don't just do physical activity, we do nutrition. Parks are actually the second biggest provider of meals to children right after schools through summer feeding programs and after school activities. I didn't even know that until I joined NRPA. So we do a lot of nutrition programs with children. Mental health, we all know that going out to the park and connecting with nature has positive effects on your mental well-being, depression, stress, overall quality of life. And then the social benefits, a lot of research shows that parks unite families and reduces crime and brings people together. There's support groups, there's senior walking groups that parks provide, so there's a lot that goes on at parks. And this is one of my favorite quotes that comes from the Trust for Public Land, which is, when people have access to parks, It leads to improved health and chronic disease prevention. I actually use this in everything that I do because I think it says so much. So I'm not going to go into the research that supports why parks improve physical activity. I think we know this, but these are some of my favorites I wanted to stick up there. Living close to a park is related to high levels of physical activity. Increasing access to recreational facilities is essential for preventing childhood obesity. We know a lot of this. Active Living Research has some of the greatest research around parks and trail development. That last one you see up there is something that we're really focused on these days, which is lower income populations and some racial and ethnic populations have limited access to parks, thus leading to disparities in their lower physical activity levels among these populations. So as I said before, I'm going to talk about what parks are doing to increase physical activity. Parks are really a huge partner in that effort to build healthy communities. They're a vital part of the community, and together they're part of the community system with entities like schools, health departments, hospitals, the YMCAs, businesses. They are now working together with these entities to build healthy communities, and that's what I want to talk to you all about. These are some of the things that they're doing. I'm going to share some specific examples of how they're improving trails, what they're doing to improve safety in the parks, how they're building joint use agreements to be working with the schools to get people physically active. But first, I want to talk a little bit about our program. So other entities started recognizing parks as a key catalyst in changing healthy communities or improving healthy communities and creating policy changes or changes in their environment to get people physically active. So in 2008 and in 2010, we were awarded two very large grants from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And that was specifically to work with 40 communities, diverse communities across the country representing urban, suburban, rural, underserved, to help them, provide them with technical assistance as they develop these policy and environmental changes in their community. So the first program is in the top left. It's actually Action Communities for Health, Innovation, and Environmental Change. It's a mouthful, so we just call it ACHIEVE. And on the top right is Communities Putting Prevention to Work. The one on the left really supplies a very small amount of funding to communities to get them to promote policy systems and environmental changes. The one on the right works primarily with health departments, and it's a large amount of funding, but the parks really aren't receiving a lot of funds. So we've been very excited to see the types of changes that these funded communities have made. And just a quick background on the whole policy systems and environmental change model. The focus of that is to increase access to and consumption of healthy foods, to increase opportunities for physical activity, and to reduce access, use, and exposure to tobacco. And I know tobacco use came up earlier. We do a lot of work with tobacco-free parks. And then on the left, you see there a great side effect of this whole effort. It's improving local, state, and national collaboration within communities. Like I said earlier, parks are now working with so many different entities and key decision makers in their communities. And really quickly, the phases of ACHIEVE and CPPW, it starts there at the top with the commitment phase. So the parks come in and they develop these small to large coalitions representing those entities. They get someone from their school, they get someone from businesses, they get their mayor and decision makers, their YMCAs, health departments, and they form this coalition that's going to make key decisions for their community to build the healthy community. Then they move into the assessment phase where they engage in this very rigorous health assessment that was developed by the CDC to start going into various sites in their community, like the work sites, like the schools, to ask them, okay, what are some of your needs? How are the kids looking? Are people walking to school? Are they biking to school? What are some of the challenges that you see that they're facing? And they conduct this assessment, they get all this data, and then they move into the planning phase where they come together with their coalition and they decide to prioritize that data and decide what to work on. How are we going to build this healthy community? And that's the planning phase, and that's where they develop their community action plan. And that could include tobacco-free parks. We have a smoking problem, so we're going to get people tobacco-free in public spaces. Or we're going to have to improve like 20 miles of trails because nobody's using them. So that comes in the planning phase. Then you move into implementation, which is pretty self-explanatory. They start implementing their changes, working with the Department of Planning or the Department of Transportation to improve trails, for example. And then the evaluation phase, where they're supposed to be looking at impacts and how is this really making a difference in the community? How many people are actually using the new trail that we developed? And what difference is that making in their health? Has that improved our obesity rates? Has that improved our overweight rates? And so it's a really nice model, and it's been working really well. And so to give you a few examples of what people are doing, how are parks getting people more physically active? I wanted to share some of the work of our Achieve sites and our CPPW sites. This is Davenport Parks and Recreation out in Iowa. They have a huge system of trails, 50 parks and more than 15 miles of walking and biking trails. So they decided to implement a long-range plan to connect all of their trails in their community to make them loop. And to do this, they brought in their schools, they brought in city planning, they brought in police and public works, and they conducted various assessments, like a transportation assessment with the schools to figure out how many kids are walking and biking to school. They did a walking survey to check out whether there are sidewalks that needed repairs or are there trails that don't have enough lighting. Why aren't people using these areas? They also did a trail survey to see if there's any trails that need specific repairs. And so what they ended up doing is repaving all of their trails, expanding them from 6 to 8 feet wide, restriping some of their lanes to make bike lanes. They added signs to note mileage and distances to various locations, and they've seen some great improvement in the trail usage after that. And so this is a pilot. They were really looking at making this a lot more useful to the senior population and the disabled population. There were a lot of mobility issues with their trails. So this is just one example of what a community is doing to improve access to their parks and get people physically active. Safety, that's come up in a couple of the presentations already. That's a huge concern as to why people are not coming to parks. This is a great example. In Chicago, they have Humboldt Park. And if you were to go into a web browser, and I remember being on this travel site for Chicago, and it says places that are considered safe and places that are considered unsafe. And Humboldt Park was in the unsafe place category, and it just said the best thing for you to do is just to avoid it altogether, which is a really big challenge for them. And this is a park that's sited on all four sides by major urban boulevards and speeding cars. So what they've decided to do is implement safe park zones, and that's actually one of their signs. And they have reduced the speed limit around their parks to 20 miles per hour. And that, I think their state is also helping with that. Lamont, Illinois, is also implementing safe park zones and reduce the speed limit. For your first offense, you get a ticket of $250, and your second offense is $500. And that's what I call enforcement. So, and enforcement is a major challenge too, but this is an effort to get kids physically active in the park and to get people using their park to improve safety. Safe routes to park is another safety issue. This is access. This is to build a functional network of bike lanes, boulevards, bike paths, trails and sidewalks, and connecting places where people live, work, and play. So this is La Mesa, California. They're just starting this work, and so they've put together in July of this year this open house to talk to people about what obstacles have you had in getting to the park, how can we improve access, to get their community involved in helping to improve safe routes to parks. But I know in Miami, Florida, it has also done work on safe routes to parks. They built a bridge that connects 6 miles of one trail to 4 miles of another. And by building that bridge, they were allowed to connect, or that enabled them to connect 3 county parks, 1 national park, 3 non-motorized shared use trails, and 1 bike lane. And so that's creating an infrastructure of non-motorized transportation, facilitating that. And that's what Safe Routes to Parks is all about. Joint use agreements is another area that parks are looking at, especially with their schools. This is a formal agreement between 2 government entities outlining terms to share use of resources. And some great examples are access to school facilities after school hours, use of city recreational facilities during school hours. And this example here is a park creating a joint use agreement with a housing authority unit so that their housing units can get access to a trail that the park has built. And they've actually put fitness equipment, installed that around the trail also to get people from the housing unit physically active. I know I'm running out of time. Okay, so Mid-Ohio Valley, West Virginia, they're doing wayfinding signs to get people to use their trails and getting them comfortable. I'll go through this one really fast. So the example on the left is what their plan to build a wayfinding sign is going to look like. The one on the right isn't actually theirs. This is one I pulled out from Maryland, but that's what it ultimately looks like. People are more likely going to use your trails if they know where they're going. So that's one way that this park is trying to get people to use their trails. And then finally, I have to talk about Kauai, because that's one of our communities, one of our favorite ones. And what, you know, surprisingly, they actually, people depend on cars in Kauai. People are not out walking and biking. I find that very strange. But what is actually happening there is they have a very bad infrastructure in place. They need to improve their sidewalks and their biking paths. And so a little change that they're making right now is installing bike racks outside of their parks so that people can get to the park safely and they know that their bikes are safely locked away while they're recreating in the park. I would have put a picture of a bike rack up there, but I thought you'd rather be looking at their beach. So parks are doing a lot. I talked about quite a few of the ones up here. Stairwell use is another that I didn't mention too much about. Physical activity opportunities within the parks. They're creating programs, marketing this a lot so that people can get to the parks. And one of the areas that we're now looking at, you know, these are new projects for us. We're looking at impact. We know that our work is touching 13 million people right now. We know that the number of joint use agreements has increased. We've improved a lot of mileage, but in terms of impacts, we're getting there. We're looking at which policies have been easier for parks to implement versus where the gaps are and where we could focus on more, how many people have been impacted by these changes. And we are going to be coming out with a case studies document next summer that really documents what these communities have done around improving physical activity and nutrition and reducing tobacco use through our two programs. So that will be coming out next summer. And with that, does anyone have any questions? Yes. There's a lot of creative ways that people are doing this. I haven't specifically heard of mother-daughter programs, but I'm sure if I were to reach out to some of our parks, that probably exists. But, you know, like Bring Your Kid to the Park Day and Family Park Day, those are types of events that are always occurring, or blocking out certain streets, busy streets, and bringing out like the parks and the park equipment to those areas so that the families can be recreating with their kids. But I don't have any specific example for you. But that's a great thought. Any other questions? Yes.
Does your organization assist with the local evaluations and events that you have published?
We do assist with them, but they're considered confidential for the local community. But if you were to contact me, I'm sure there are some that would be happy to share some of that data with you. Yeah. Any others? All right.